The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week is every week. We work super hard to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And big shout out to Tiffany Ray and Scott Ellsworth, who took over the show over the course of the last 3 weeks, thus allowing me time to be out of town and not worry about what are we going to do, what kind of pre-recordings am I going to have to do, what kind of old shows are we going to have to run. They did an awesome job, and really appreciate them for taking that particular worry off of my back over the last 3 weeks. If you'd like to meet Scott and Tiffany in person, you really need to get to tomorrow night's Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati Annual Expo. This is a big event every year. In fact, it's the biggest event that an already very large group holds every single year. It's some vendors and tradespeople. It's lots and lots of other local investors here in the greater Cincinnati area, all there to network and build relationships. There's food, there's door prizes. And it's free. Didn't I mention it's free? So, like, nothing bad about the expo, and it only comes around one time per year. The only thing the group asks is that you please RSVP, because you know that free food? It's not actually free. It's free in the same way that free a college education is free. Somebody's paying for it. It's just not you. And we got to know how much food to order. So that would be at CincinnatiREIA.com, CincinnatiREIA.com. It is open to the public. And yeah, whether you've been or not, you should be there, because it's a really good, fun, valuable event. CincinnatiREIA.com. Today on Real Life Real Estate Investing, we're talking about notes. I don't know why. This is a real estate show. We're all into properties around here. We like buying bricks and mortar and managing them, and or maybe having somebody else managing them and being in them for the long-term cash flow and appreciation and joy of owning bricks and mortar. And it just feels like they have something to do with notes, though, because if you go ask some of the people you know, actually, I would just challenge you, go ask any of the people you know who've been in real estate for 20 years or more and who are doing real well in it, what they think about notes. You're going to find out that pretty much 100% of them own or have owned or create as part of their business notes. Got to be some kind of connection here. We just got to figure out what it is. Here to help us understand both what is going on in the note world right now and also why notes are just another thing you're going to end up studying, just like you study rental management, just like you study how to rehab properties, because if you're in the property business, you're in the note business, is Ms. Donna Bauer, the original note buyer. Did you hear the registered trademark at the end of that? I'm not quite sure what font to use to say that. Maybe you actually hear the registered trademark at the end of that. She has been buying, selling, creating, making her living off of notes for over 30 years. She's from right here in the greater Cincinnati area, which means she's sitting across from me in the studio, which is that's kind of unusual on this show anymore. So, Donna, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And good to have you. I do try to touch base with you, like, personally on the phone every 6 months or so, just kind of to find out what's going on in the note world. And I know over the last, since 2012 to like 2023, it was basically like, well, more of the same. It's just same thing except more of it. But things have changed a whole lot here in the real estate world since 2023. What has changed in the note world?
Well, if you're into seller finance notes, because there's all different aspects of note buying, but a lot of people like to flip seller carrybacks. And one of the things we ran into when the rates were lower was that people were refinancing their notes and there were less, and it was more easy, a lot easier for people to get a mortgage. So there were less seller carryback notes created. But now that we've had several years of the higher rates, the great news is that there have been a lot of seller carrybacks created now. So that market is doing great and you can, find seller carryback notes and flip those for easy cash. So that's one aspect that a lot of people look at.
Yeah, I noticed that I hear from time to time from somebody trying to sell a seller carryback note that at the time at which they carried it back, the interest rate seemed really like spectacularly high. You know, I was getting 6%. Well, that when interest rates were 2.5, right? And they were like, oh my gosh, you know, it was such a great return for me. And now they're going, okay, I get it. That's not even market right now. And I'm going to have to sell it at a discount. But boy, it was really awesome when it first happened. And of course they expected, by making the rate 6%, that they would be encouraging their buyers to pay off that mortgage that they carried back with a bank loan. In fact, I was going through my own portfolio of notes that like other people have carried back to me, you know, like private loans. The other day and kind of going, okay, are there any of these I should refinance? And they're all basically at rates at or below what I can get in the market right now. So if any of my private lenders got in the mood to sell one of those long-term notes, they would have to be selling it like at or below face value.
But, you know, sometimes it's worth it to sell it because you can take the cash and reinvest it at such a higher rate of return that it really makes up for the discount.
Yeah, especially when you get down to those last few years of that loan where basically all that's being paid back to you is principal anyway. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're going to talk today about notes, like notes and mortgages, and why real estate investors who think as I did 25 years ago, oh, I will never be in the note and mortgage business, still ought to really understand notes and mortgages. And we have like the note buyer here in the studio today. So if you have any questions about notes, whether they seem to be on topic to what we're talking about or not, give us a call at 877-772-9658, 877-772-9658, or just send it over via email. The address is vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today is Donna Bauer, and we are talking about the relevance of just having an information, education, understanding about the note and mortgage business. I mean, obviously, if you're in the real estate business, you're just going to deal with notes and mortgages all the time because you're going to borrow money. And that involves a note and a mortgage. But there's another layer to that, which is sometimes those notes and mortgages go up for sale. And you might be thinking about, like, is there any way I could make a deal out of this? Sometimes your own note and mortgage goes up for sale. I don't know if I told you this story, Donna, but you will recall several decades ago, You and I used to meet as part of a mastermind group every other week. This was back in the days before Zoom. So we actually dragged ourselves to Perkins in the morning every couple of weeks with some other ladies. And the rest of us were all real estate people, and we'd all stare at you like you had two heads when you said, I don't know why you guys want to own real estate. You know, my notice of mortgage has never called me up in the middle of the night and asked me to unplug their toilet. And of course now, I very much realize that they're just part of, my day-to-day life. But I think just to shut you up or satisfy you or something, I actually took your class back then. And one of the things that I learned was about first rights of refusal and, stuff that I was like, okay, whatever. I had a private lender a couple of years back who suddenly called. I had three private loans with him. He suddenly called and said, I need to liquidate everything and I need to do it now. I'm having a health crisis. I don't want my wife to collect payments in case I'm gone. And I was able to discount my own note. In other words, what he wanted was for me to pay it off for less than what I owed. So maybe I owed $100,000. He was willing to let me pay it off for $82,000 or something. But instead of doing that, I bought my own notes for $82,000, and then I turned around and flipped the notes for $99,000 or something. Yeah. And then what the effect on me was, all suddenly I had cash. But also my payment didn't change. Like I was just paying on the same note, same amount, same interest rate, same everything, same term, same everything. But I had cash in my pocket as well. And that's the kind of thing that I never, when we first started talking about these, I never in a million years would have thought that I would run across.
You know, that's the issue with most people. You don't know what you don't know. And the thing is that notes are the very foundation of most real estate deals. Unless it's an all cash deal, it involves a note. And sure, you can just go around along and you make the payments and refinance and do all the typical things. But when you learn the essence of notes, the essence of discounting, the essence of creating notes and coming up with very creative structures, you'll put more deals together, you'll make more money. It's just really amazing what can be done once you learn what notes are capable of helping you with.
I think one of the most basic ways in which if people understood notes, they would do so much better is when they are trying to get a seller to finance a property for them. Like, I want you to carry the payments for me, but the seller has some need for cash. It's not like, oh no, I want my cash. It's no, I have to have X tens of thousands of dollars at the closing because I am moving. I am buying RVs. I hear that a lot. I want to buy an RV. And they're expensive, man. They're like $70,000 to $150,000. Talk about how that can work if you actually know how notes work.
This is the most awesome thing. You truly can buy a house with no money down and still give the seller cash at closing, and even maybe walk away with some money for repairs or whatever you want. And the way that you do that is you have the seller create a seller carry back note, and then you help them to sell so many of the payments. Not the whole mortgage, but maybe 3 years of payments or something like that, depending on how much money they need to raise. And so let's say they sell 3 years of payments. Now, what you're going to do is you are going to sell that to an investor friend of yours, and you will make money on the sale of it. Okay. And then you'll have this cash that you can give to the homeowner. So they have a down payment, more or less.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about this idea of you're going to sell it, because I think that if there is a basic misunderstanding about how notes work,
it's not your note.
It has to do with like, okay, so I borrowed all this money and now I'm going to sell this note that I borrowed the money on. When you say you're selling it, what you mean is you're finding the
You are facilitating it, okay? And you, because you can't sell it because it's not your note. Mm-hmm. But what you can do, and because you know that the seller wants a down payment, you explain this all ahead of the time to them, and you say, what I can help you do, I have someone who will buy the first 3 years of payments, and we will give you $40,000 for those payments. Now, you won't receive payments for 3 years. Is that all you need? Because we could sell 5 years of payments if you would like, you know?
Well, how is that better though? I mean, if I need $40,000, why don't I just borrow 40 from my investor friend and use that as a down payment and let the seller carry the rest?
Well, you could do that. I just find this way much easier to do. And also, I'm not on the hook for the money. Well, I'm on the hook to pay the entire mortgage, you know, but a lot of people don't have private investors like that they can do that with. But mm-hmm. I think I have done this several times, and it's just an awesome way to do a transaction.
Well, let me just tell you from the real estate investor perspective.
Okay.
It normally, like when I do the math on that, like I'm going to have a first and a second because I had to borrow money to get the seller a down payment. The house can't afford the payments on a first and a second. When I only have one payment, which is what happens in the scenario where the seller has carried it back and just the seller has sold off the first 3 years worth of payments to my friend, Donna, who I called because the situation came up. I still only have one payment. It's just who I make the payment to changes in month 37. I stop paying Donna and start paying whoever the original person was. And also, I've noticed that my investor friends who want to loan money on deals like that want like 12 to 14% interest, and that sellers want payments. They don't really care that much about interest,
right,
if we're being honest. So the terms are generally in the long run a whole lot better with a seller carry back type mortgage. So yeah, all you creative finance people out there who are like, I can't find a seller who will truly take no money down. I don't need to.
You don't need to. You can totally get around it with this.
Yeah, and you know other creative finance people, so you don't promise sellers things. You don't say, oh no, I guarantee that somebody will be there at the table. You go ahead and find the person, explain the deal that you're about to propose to the seller, and say, they need $40,000. How many years worth of these payments would you need to have in order to give the seller $40,000 at the table?
And your investor loves it because they're in first position.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like having a first position note and the seller keeping a second, but it's just one note. If they buy the first 36 payments, those would have senior position over the seller's payments.
Sure. Absolutely. So just got an email at vinaradio@gmail.com. This is from Beth. She says, I love what you're saying about selling a partial. We didn't say those words, but that's the official name of like when you buy 36 payments or 60 payments or whatever of a mortgage. What happens if I have bought a partial and then the loan pays off early?
Okay. If that should happen, first of all, when you buy a partial, you will run an amortization schedule of what is owed to you. And so if the note pays off, you calculate the borrower's payoff just like normal. And then you go to the payments, the 36 payments, say, that you purchased, and you see how much is still owed on those 36 payments, and you receive that balance that's still owed to you, and then the note seller would keep the rest of it.
Okay. Boy, that was the simplest explanation I've ever heard about that, because that confused the heck out of me the first time. The first time somebody said, "Hey, I'm going to pay this loan off early," and I'm like, "I sold a partial. I don't know how much they get and how much I get."
The key is to have the amortization schedule done. You have to set it up and get all your documents in a row when you close the deal, and then the rest is simple.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of situations that I never thought would pop up in my life and then did over and over and over again. Sometimes you get calls from people who think they're selling you a house.
Oh. All the time.
And they, in fact, no longer own a house. Yes. They own a note or a land, a contract for deed is real common in this part of the country. How does that even happen? How does somebody sell their house and not know they sold their house?
I got one to top that. Somebody calls and they're selling you the note that they carried back, but the house is appreciated by $200,000, so they want $200,000 more for the note. Uh-huh. They don't own the house,
yes,
but they want the appreciation.
Yeah, so the buyer only owes me $100, but I want $250 for the house they don't. Oh, I know.
It really happens. And they think they're entitled to that.
And trying to explain to them that, okay, you don't understand. I could give you $250 today, and tomorrow you're borrower, your person who you sold the house to 10 years ago could call me up and say, oh, good news, I got a loan, here's your $100,000. How does that work for me? And they say, well, they could default.
right.
Well, when they do, call me.
I totally get it. But that's what happens a lot of times, and it's just because people are not familiar with what the note is, and they have to understand that the note is the financing, it is an asset, and it is not the same as the house. The note is very safe because it is secured by the house.
Mm-hmm.
But the person holding the note and receiving payments, you're basically the bank. The bank doesn't own your house. The bank can't decide what to do with your house as long as you make payments.
Yeah. I think there's a fair number of people who do seller financing, and often it's to friends or relatives.
Yes, that happens.
Who they made the deal, and then literally they kind of forgot what the deal was. Like they think of it like they're getting rent, because maybe it was a rental house before, right? And I'm still getting checks every month, so I can sell my house because I'm renting it. I think sometimes they don't fully understand what they did at the time that they did it, but I think it's more common that they just honestly, in their heads, I'm getting payments every month. It's a rental. I don't want it anymore. I can sell it. Or also very common when you sell to relatives and carry back financing, just a warning for all listeners, the relatives will stop paying at some point. I mean, that's...
I am a firm believer that you do not lend... I recommend that you do not lend relatives money unless you would also give them the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or unless you foreclose on them.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're talking today about notes and mortgages and the note and mortgage business, really, and why it's kind of useful for real estate investors to, you know, it's not like you don't have to like be the world's biggest expert in notes and mortgages. You don't even have to go out and chase them. I did not at all. I still to this day, Donna, have never done any marketing to go buy a note and mortgage. It's just they show up, you know, and you should know what to do with them when they do show up.
That is right.
If you have questions, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. Talking today to Donna Bauer, the original note buyer, about anything you want to talk about notes and mortgages. And I'm just talking about what I want to know about it. I would be remiss if amongst all this fun that we're having here in the studio, I did not mention that Donna is one of the featured keynote speakers at the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association's National Real Estate Investing Conference. That is the first time this year I've had to say all those words together. Because, you know, in the office, we don't call it the National Real Estate Summit. We still call it OREA from like 20 years ago when only Ohio people came to it. And now it's the National Real Estate Investing Summit. That is coming up this year, October 30th through November 2nd here in Cincinnati. I know a lot of you have expressed over the years that, oh, I need to get to that some year. I need to get to that some year. Here's 3 months notice for you, ladies and gentlemen. Put it in your calendar, October 30th, 31st, November 1st, and 2nd. As always, it is 100% oriented toward like what is happening in the market today, which is interesting, what's happening in the market today. But interesting always is a combination of good things and bad things. The bad things is what you have been doing may not work exactly the same way it has been. But the good news is it's not working that way for anybody. So if you are the one who's like, but haha, I know what is working, you're going to kill it in the market. In fact,
I don't know if I, we did our usual contest about naming the conference this year, and we haven't told the winner that he won yet because I just got back into town, but I'm kind of tempted to go ahead and do the big reveal right now.
You want a drum roll?
Oh, yes, please. Okay. The 2025 National Real Estate Investing Conference shift happens.
That is great. That's great.
It's pretty. It's pretty, you know. Like, once I saw that one come up, I was like, yeah, that's what it feels like.
Time to shift.
Yeah, the shift is hitting the fan. Yep. Yeah, we'll be talking about that more here on the show over the next couple of weeks leading up to a fun drive, but it's very inexpensive to attend. People are coming from all over the country. You should really be there. Let's go to line one and talk to Russell from Connecticut. Russell.
Hi, welcome back.
Thank you,
welcome
Russell.
Welcome back, and great to see, hear you and Guy. My question is if there's a relationship with assuming a mortgage in the note buying or selling business, and where that is, because there's been talk about with the higher interest rates, taking on a note that was maybe at like 2.5% or something. Although, and what would that seller then do as far as finding it, unless the seller, I guess, presumably did something similar.
Well, I think what you're going to be triggering for Donna right now is a lecture on the joys of wrap mortgages.
Because okay. Yeah.
That's it does always go back to seller financing for me in my head. And yeah, there's a lot of sellers out there, Donna, that we used to see this a lot. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say in the 80s, because that would, that would imply that we back in the 80s, there were a lot of loans that were they weren't as low, you know, they weren't 2%, but they were like 6 and 7, but rates were now 12 mm-hmm. and 14 and 16%.
Right.
And sellers yep. Started to learn that if they wanted to finance, they could actually take advantage of some of that quote spread. And that just died. Like nobody talked about that for years and years and years, but we're back in that position.
That's
again.
Right. That's right. So if you are wanting to buy a house and there is a very low interest, like bank mortgage on it, rather than pay that mm-hmm. off, one thing that you can do is leave the mortgage in place, and you would have them do a wrap mortgage. And what that is, mm-hmm. like let's say there's a $20,000 bank note on the property, and you're going to buy it for $100,000. You could wrap that, meaning that they would give you you would give them a mortgage for $100,000, but out of that $100,000, they would make the payments on the $20,000. And typically they're higher than $20,000. It might be a $40,000-$50,000 note, depends on how long it's been in place and whatnot. But the point is, it's a great way to use other people's money. And so you would make payments on your $100,000 note, and then they would just turn around and make payments on the bank note.
And
the bank note, got it. Okay.
Yeah, and oftentimes, Russell, the seller can do that even if the balance on the bank loan is way closer to the value of the house. So you live in Connecticut. Let's talk about a $400,000 mm-hmm. property. The seller mm-hmm. owes $370,000. You've agreed, but they owe it at like 2.1%, and you've looked at the rental numbers, and you've decided, well, I could pay $380,000. They can actually make a whole bunch of money by wrapping their 2.5% 370 mortgage with like a 4% $380,000 mortgage. Like they can have a lot left over after they have taken your payment and sent the bank their portion of the payment.
Okay.
So does that answer your question?
I sort of follow that, though. It's kind of a little bit...
It helps to draw yourself a picture.
Right.
I was first learning about wrap mortgages, I literally had to draw pictures of here's the first mortgage. It's $370,000 at 2.1% interest, and that results in a payment of, I have no idea, let's make it up and say $2,500.
I'm giving the seller, and I draw a circle around the first circle, I'm giving the seller a $380,000 mortgage at 5% interest, which results in a payment of $3,200 a month. So what happens is I give the seller $3,200 and they give the bank $2,500 and they get $700 every month. Like, I literally had to draw myself a picture.
Got it. Okay. That's clear. All right. Yes. Write it all down as a picture. Yet. I'm visual, so yeah.
Yeah, math is hard on the radio.
All right. It's hard to do, right?
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call, Russell. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Also have an email here from JC in Las Vegas. Would you please ask Donna about when she thinks creating seller financing that is meant to be sold. Okay, I see what's happening. So I have a house. I don't want it anymore. So I'm going to find some nice family that does want it, and I'm going to finance it for them. The question is, if really what I want is cash, like I'm the seller now and I'm the one who wants the cash, does it make more sense for me to just give Mike here a first mortgage for the whole amount, or to do like a first mortgage and a second mortgage if what I want to do is sell one or both of those mortgages to get cash?
Have you taken my course? Because a lot of times you can wind up with more money and not taking as much of a discount if you do that. In other words, and part of it depends on how much money is put down and all those things. You've got to look at all the numbers. But basically, let's say that there's 100% financing and you've got a $100,000 note. Well, an investor is not going to pay $100,000 if the house is worth $100,000 as well. And it's 100% loan to value. An investor is probably going to want on a residential home an 80% loan to value. So that means that you're going to take a 20% discount. Whereas if you do an $80,000 first and a $20,000 second, and you're going to keep the second, you're not going to sell it, then all you're selling is the $80,000 first. Well, it's at 80% loan to value, so you don't have to take as much of a discount, and you'll ultimately wind up with more money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. That is a very, very smart decision.
So basically what I'm then getting is I'm selling my 80% first for hopefully pretty close to face value, pretty close to whatever's owned. And I'm going to continue to get payments on the second. So in my head, that's best of both worlds.
You're not kidding.
I'm not turning all of my payment stream into cash. I'm just turning part of my payment stream into cash. Let me ask you a question about something that we keep finding is coming up over and over again on the Friday morning haves and wants meetings that happen with Cincinnati RIA. We do get people who come there and they want to sell a partial, or they want to sell maybe a whole note that they carried back, or maybe they're even flipping a note, whatever. And the amount of money required, I mean, people are excited about doing it. Like, yes, I want that return, but the amount of money required is really big. And they start kind of wanting to partner up. So Donna, we need, there's this great note on this awesome house that we would both be perfectly happy to have should it default. However, it's a $600,000 investment to make that note, and I only have $300,000 and you have $300,000. How can we do this deal together? Is there a way to do that that doesn't just like set your teeth on edge?
You can see my face as I cringe while you're asking this. Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm not an attorney. That is a very good question for an attorney. And the reason is that you have to be careful when you are, quote, pooling money for a deal. And there are ways around it. The first thing that comes to my mind is to set up a trust and put the property into a trust, and then each party owns a percentage of the entire note, or they own a percentage of the beneficial interest in that trust.
Okay. And that, by the way, is it's a different kind of trust than what we've talked about here from time to time, as being a land trust. It's more of like a personal property trust. And yes, you definitely need to get an attorney involved in that who is knowledgeable.
If they're buying the property, then it would be a land trust.
Sure.
But if it is a note, like you can hold your note in a personal property trust, and people can put, you know, if you're wanting to buy a note, it would be a personal property trust.
Mm-hmm.
If they're buying the property, it could be a land trust.
Okay, so if listeners, if you have any questions, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Do you feel like tackling a Dodd-Frank type question?
Sure, hit me with it.
we have another question here from a listener who's clearly fairly sophisticated and or experienced. Asked Donna how she recommends dealing with the desire or need for certainty of a future lump sum payment with consumer notes in the post-Dodd-Frank era. So let me translate that for the audience. Let me translate what I think I'm hearing here. Again, we're talking about this a lot. I've got a rental property. I don't want it anymore. On the other hand, I do like getting payments. So I'm going to find a nice family. I'm going to qualify them. I'm going to sell it to them on monthly payments. Prior to 2011, I guess it was, when Dodd-Frank went into effect, I could say, okay, Mike, I'm going to carry this note for you and your family, but only for 5 years. After 5 years, you have got to, like, get your life together and go to a bank and get me a payoff. And under Dodd-Frank, you're really not supposed to put balloons into notes that have homeowners on the back end. Well, that drives a lot of people crazy. You know, like if I'm a 75-year-old investor and I'm being told I've got to carry a 30-year note, that might not be that attractive to me. So any suggestions about how to handle that, you know, but no, I want to get paid in 5 years, maybe, you know, because oftentimes 5 years comes and I go, well, you know, actually I kind of like getting the payments better. Any suggestions about handling that with any certainty that in 5 years I can get the rest of my money?
Well, the first thing that I think of is that with Dodd-Frank, if there are exceptions for true seller carrybacks, if you were the owner of the property, if you're an individual or a trust and you sell with seller financing, you can put a balloon on it.
I think that's only true if it was your primary residence, and if you haven't, and particularly if you haven't done it more than three times in a rolling calendar year.
I was just going to say that if you're in the business of doing it, that is a whole nother story. Quite frankly, I don't. What would you suggest? Let me just ask you that.
I would suggest in 4.5 years, I'm going to call Donna and say, I want to sell this note. Like the idea of certainty of cash does not mean that the seller has to, or the buyer has to pay you off.
That is exactly right. But you wouldn't want to put the balloon in the note to begin with.
Right. But I mean, effectively you can create a balloon anytime.
Just by selling whenever you want.
Yeah. So when we think about balloons, we think about the seller has to do something, or I'm sorry, I keep saying seller, the buyer has to proactively go do something that they may not be able to do. I mean, I think a lot of people who thought they were going to refinance their properties after 5 years are finding today they cannot do that because
That's
they
right.
cannot afford the payments on the increased interest rate and whatnot. But the question here was about, I want my money in 5 years. You don't have to get it from the borrower.
That's the beauty of carrying back a note. They are negotiable instruments, and you can sell it, and you do not need the permission of the borrower to do that.
Mm-hmm. And the borrower, again, is unaffected except that he's now sending his payments someplace else.
Exactly.
He's not sending them to you anymore. So, Donna, you walked in here with a ton of notes about things that you wanted real estate investors, you know, people who are like, no, I only buy properties, to know about the things that knowing about notes could add to their lives. Let's spend these last 5 minutes just letting you go.
I'm going to just rattle off, because I was brainstorming with myself, what cool things can I tell people that they can do with notes? We already talked about you can sell a house and carry a note back, and you can even turn around and sell that note for and give the seller cash. You can buy a house and pay on a note, and then well, that's what we already talked about. You can, there's so many things that you can do. You can flip a seller carry back note for quick cash. You can flip a defaulted note for quick cash. And defaulted notes is a whole different ballgame. And by the way, there is a huge amount of matured notes that banks are holding right now that are not going to be able to be refinanced because either the people can't afford the high interest right now, they're in a note that's for 3%, and now that note is due. And so we're going to be seeing a lot of defaulted notes, especially in multifamilies and office buildings.
I just bought one of those about a month ago. Just bought a it is both in default because payments have only been received sporadically during the course of the note. And also next month, it's over. Next month, it balloons. It's an investor loan and it balloons. So, I got a nice discount on that.
I believe it.
If they pay, my return is double digits and not like 12 or 14%. Yeah. And if they don't pay, there's no scenario under which I am not getting all of my money back, even if I have to foreclose, because the loan to value is just low compared to the value of the property.
One of the coolest things and the easiest thing to do if you want to make high returns, especially in a self-directed IRA, is to buy a note at a discount. And all you have to do is wait for an early payoff or encourage it. Mm-hmm. And when you get that early payoff, and your return on that is going to totally skyrocket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, self-directed IRAs, huh? Boy,
self-directed
let's
IRAs.
Let's open up that can of worms 5 minutes before the...
Oh, there is so much you can do with them. You can do private loans. You can have your IRA buy a note and sell just part of it and keep the tail end of the note in your IRA. Mm-hmm. I did that and it had $35,000. It was like an arbitrage that money was left into my IRA, and I didn't even have an investment in it. Well, what I did was, you need to show consideration. So I show consideration, but I get it right back.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty awesome. You can do private loans. You can do private loans and use, even when you don't have money, use your investor's money, give the investor the interest, and you keep the points. You can put the points in your IRA. If you have a small amount of money in your IRA, you could do a wrap mortgage and just use that to do the wrap. I mean, the possibilities are really endless once you learn how notes work. And you have to figure out what do you want to accomplish and then see how you can make the note work to get that.
That how notes work thing is so important. Let me just say 25 years later, you were right.
I can't believe it.
It's so important. One of the things that I know you taught this in your class. I remember hearing the word and going, well, that's never going to apply to me. My brain moved on. Hypothecation, this idea of borrowing money against a note that you have, rather than sell my seller finance notes, because I do carry quite a few of those. I really like doing seller financing, particularly in affordable areas, because there's so many people who they could own a house, but not with a bank, right? They can own it. They can afford it. They can maintain it. They can do the work on it, all that sort of stuff. So I really like those. And it used to be that when I was like, I need cash to go do something else, go buy another house or whatever, I would sell my seller finance note. And I never loved that idea. So when I went back and actually bothered to learn about hypothecations and realized that I could borrow most of the value of that note. And I mean, it requires some paperwork. Like, this isn't just, hey, Donna, give me some money. Like, there's some serious paperwork involved here, that I could achieve both goals, right? I can have the money right now that I need to go do the other thing. And if the other thing turns out to be short term, I flipped a property. Okay. I get the money back. I pay off the loan on my loan and I go back to getting those payments I liked at that high rate.
That is an awesome thing to do. I do collateral assignments, is another word for it, term for it. My favorite thing is when I find, one of them, is when I find a really good note that I think is going to pay off early and going to bring me a windfall, instead of selling it, I borrow the money to buy it from an investor. I put the note that I'm buying up as collateral for that loan. My investor gets a nice return, and usually I give him a bonus for an early payoff, so he's very happy. And meanwhile, when that pays off, I get a huge windfall.
Oh my gosh, so much that can be done once you understand. I think the first understanding is you have to understand that you have to understand.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And stop saying, you know, I'll do something about that off in the future when I'm rich. Because since all the people I know who have notes are rich, you must need to be rich to do notes. When in fact that may have happened the other way around.
The funny thing is that I see all these older people coming to me wanting to get into notes, and they said their biggest regret is just what you said, waiting. If they had known the potential and the opportunities in notes, they would have started with notes and maybe added real estate to it.
Yeah, my very first quote note investment was a note flip. Even at the time that I had gotten that I got a lead. I don't even know why they came to me. They just knew I was in real estate, knew I was in Cincinnati, and said, "Hey, do you want to buy a note?" And I was like, okay, I'll figure it out. It was a flip. Like I could not have written a check for that note, but I knew people who could write checks for that note.
That's all it takes.
And my IRA made about $7,000 off of that.
Pretty cool.
Very simple phone call. All right, we are out of time, but ladies and gentlemen, you can meet Donna Bauer and hear more about learning about notes at the 2025 National Real Estate Investing Summit. You'll hear more about that in the upcoming weeks. And if you're here in the Cincinnati area, please come on out tomorrow night to the Cincinnati RIA Expo. CincinnatiRIA.com is where you get your free ticket for that. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.